Welcome to What She Said. I'm your host, Lucy Lewcroft, a freelance journalist and blogger from London. Each week, I chat to awesome humans about their journey to where they are today, and we share lots of blogging tips and tricks too. You can hear the entire back catalogue, as well as new episodes wherever you listen to podcasts by searching for my name or searching What She Said, or you can go to my website, wanderloose.com. And if you want to come say hi online, I'm at Lucy Lewcroft on Instagram or Twitter, or over at my blog, wanderloose.com. Enjoy the show. Hello, welcome back to What She Said. This week, I chat to the dreamy Hannah Bullivant, well, can't even speak, all about her journey to where she is today as a blogger and stylist extraordinaire. We talk motherhood, self-doubt, and how she's carving a heart-centered, family-focused business. Her incredible January book, You Need This in Your Life, and how her blog was the turning point for her entire career change. When we recorded this, so Hannah and I actually met in real life at Sass Petherick's workshop, Write Yourself Home. Hannah was styling it, and I knew even before I met her that I adored her on Instagram. And then when I met her, I was like, wow, she's amazing. She's brilliant. She's just so warm and friendly and intriguing and, you know, massive fangirl. I left Write Yourself Home with quite a lot of girl crushes, basically. So that's where we originally met. And when we recorded this chat, it was before she'd announced that she's due to be running some retreats with Elmley Nature, which, if you don't know Elmley Nature, if you go to Hannah's Instagram, you can read all about it there. Anyhow, I'm totally signed up. I'm desperate to to go hang out with her again. So if you know about said retreat and you're wondering why we didn't chat about it, it's because we recorded the chat before it happened. So that being said, if you need a ginormous reminder that just starting your blog can be the start of a profound career change, this one is for you. Hi, Hannah. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello.
For anybody that doesn't know who you are, can you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your blogging journey so far?
Yes, I can. I am Hannah Bullivant. I am a stylist and a blogger. I'm a mum. I live in Kent in England. And my blogging journey started as a creative outlet when I think I was 22. I was just trying to imagine. So like, I've been blogging for over 10 years, which is, whoa. Wow. So I had found myself in a really quite uninspiring office job, like a grey government quango, civil service-esque, writing policy documents about mobile phone usage. I was having a lot of moments of like, how have I ended up here? So I basically, and there were elements of that job that were good, but I felt like I needed to do something creative. I've always been quite creative. And so I started a blog just as an outlet, really. And because I'm sort of naturally drawn to interiors, I started blogging about that. And that, through a slightly convoluted path, led to me shooting my own home for an interiors magazine with a photographer who I still work with called Christy. And then that led to us doing that ongoing. So that sort of led to my, basically the blog is what led to my career change. And after I had Frankie, when I was 27, I basically decided not to go back to that job and really push out as a stylist and a blogger. And I haven't looked back since. That's a very shortened version.
It's incredible how much we, like, blogs can do for us though, isn't it? Like, you start a blog and you don't necessarily end up becoming a full-time blogger, but so many of us can really credit our blogs with our entire career.
Yeah.
What was it like at the point when you were like, okay, were you on maternity leave?
Yeah.
You decided not to go back. What was the kind of deciding factor? What did that feel like?
I think I was like, I was dreading it with every fiber of my being, trying to go back to this job. I had slightly changed jobs by this point, and had Yeah, and it was more interesting. I was doing some public affairs, some lobbying in Parliament, and those elements of it were quite interesting. But the actual subject that I was working on was around pensions. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, I don't know, like, I couldn't find my passion for it in any way. And I sort of, it was a bit of a flag that I couldn't, yeah, that I, when I was sort of approaching going back to work, this is like, I don't know how many years ago now, seven years ago. I was just, yeah, I was really full of dread about it. And so I was like, I was sort of allowed myself to dream a bit and was like, what if I don't go back to work? And, you know, what would it take? Yeah. And so we made a spreadsheet. I'm a big fan of a spreadsheet. Oh. And we kind of went through and we're like, right, what are our outgoings and how could we survive? And then what could I bring in? And then basically I had such a strong motivation to make it work. So I just kind of went hell for leather. Mm. And made it work.
How? So getting into kind of the nitty gritty, it's really scary, that jumping off point. That
it is.
When you're, I mean, it's exhilarating, isn't it? Because you're like, yeah, I'm my own boss and I really literally have no limits to what I can achieve. But also when you've got a kid, that's your limit. You can only fit in what you can fit in. And it can be really, well, I found it personally to be a real roller coaster of the highs of, oh my God, I'm bringing in as much money or more than I bought before and I'm doing it on my own terms and et cetera, et cetera, to, oh my God, my kid is ill. I've got 2 weeks where I am not earning money. How do you guys manage that?
Do you mean
at the beginning?
Yeah, I was going to say, do you mean when I was deciding about not going back or now?
Well, I guess probably in those early days when you first start, like you've made the decision, you've got your plans in place. How does it go about kind of hustling for business, et cetera, et cetera? And I actually hate that word hustle, but it kind of is a great way to sum up what I mean.
Yes. So at that point, the thing that I was hustling for was real homes. So to shoot for magazines. So we still have a really good track record of generally the houses that we shoot for magazines all go in really nice magazines. And so I just went on a mission to find, and thankfully, because through the blogging community, I know so many people with beautiful homes. So I basically started to mine that community and was like, can we come and shoot your home? Like, please let me in, probably a bit desperately. So I did hustle and I did do things that felt scary and a bit vulnerable. Because I had a very strong motivation of not wanting to go back to a 9-to-5 job.
Yeah.
And the organization I was working for was a nice organization. And I think that if it had all gone wrong, they might have had me back in a different capacity. So I slightly had a, did I have a plan B? I'm not sure if I did. I think I was like, I'll temp if I need to. Do you know what I mean? I was like, I'll do anything to make it work.
Yeah.
But as it happened, a combination of really, really pushing and being a bit brave, and also being extremely thrifty, just how we were living as a family as well, meant that I never had to go back to that 9-to-5. So yeah, from that point, it's just kind of got better and better, and I've been able to meet my income targets. And yeah, but it is hard though, the juggle when you've got sick kids. And Dave is freelance as well, so that massively helps. Yeah. But it sometimes can lead to, like, a bit of a, when we, like, you know, we've had situations before where he's got a big job on, I've got a big job on, and then both of the kids vomit and you're like, shit, what are we gonna do? Like, so then it's just, yeah, it's just kind of talking it out / arguing it out and like making a plan about, you know, who does which bits and can we call on family. And it isn't easy.
I think you're one of the things that it kind of leads us perfectly onto this. One of the things that I think you're really great at is sharing the not easy bits. So I think there's a lot of chat online about authenticity and showing your real self. And I don't know if you saw Carolyn Slow Traveller's amazing project where she hacked her own Instagram account.
And I did.
I was talking to Jules, this is Jules, about the fact that we both said happy birthday to her on that post, even though we were like, we know that she isn't 22, but I'm too embarrassed to say anything. And I know her face doesn't look quite right. but we just accepted it as fact, which is kind of scary. How we accept that. I mean, I've gone off onto a tangent, but anyway, it's got me thinking quite a lot about how even I probably, I don't know, curate myself a little bit, even on stories. But I think that you are one of the only people that I follow that really does say it like it is. Like, you will come on and say, I feel really shit today, I feel really tired, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. This is the reality of, but then you'll also share when you're walking down the street with like amazing twigs in your hand, going to do something really glamorous.
Yes.
You share both sides. I think that's awesome.
Yeah, I really try to share both sides. So, I could talk about so many things about this. Where do I start?
Instagram. Yeah, it is. So I don't really do photoshopping. I actually don't know how to do it. So I'm like, I don't do that. I was quite inspired by Carolyn's post, just that she so cleverly duped us all. You know? So yeah, and I like how she revealed it as well. I just thought it was quite creative and, you know, and different. But yeah, I mean, I don't Photoshop, but I am certainly guilty of, you know, curating a gallery and a very perfect looking gallery. Yeah. For me, that's a choice that I make. I am a stylist and I do exist in a visual world and I love beautiful things. And I love curating a gallery of beautifulness. But for me, where I need balance and where I love balance and where I love it with other people is when people share their more real side of life on stories. So for me, I sort of started to fall a bit out of love with Instagram. And then when Stories was launched, was it like a year ago? I don't even know. It feels like it's always been there. I was like, oh my God, I love this. I feel like this feels really right for me. I basically try to share both the sort of curated loveliness on my gallery versus here's the real life side of it. And I am naturally an oversharer, and I'm naturally a bit of an extrovert. So it's a good platform for me. Mm-hmm. I feel comfortable, I guess, there. Sometimes I do stories and I'm like, was that a bit much? Did I just overshare? But people, I get like, it doesn't, you know, there's nothing that I've said that hasn't had, like, it's like the more of myself that I share, the better. Connections that I get and the better community. And, so the other thing is that I do try and keep my, content helpful/inspiring as well. So even when I am whinging about being bone tired, I'm also trying to share what I'm doing to help myself or make, you know, try to turn my day around. Like whether it's, so literally just this morning, so we had a really, really brutal night with a baby who had his one year jabs yesterday, and is poorly. So I'm feeling really like broken with lack of sleep.
Yeah.
But even this morning when I was on Stories talking about that, I was like, so here's what I'm doing to help me feel a bit better about it. So I'm going to get my journal out. I'm going to write down the stuff I'm grateful for. I've drank a shitload of water. I'm going to, do these other things that I know are going to sort of turn my day around for me. Yes, I guess I'm trying to make that stuff also useful rather than just a whinge fest, because I have to, there's a balance for me. And when I follow other people, and it's constant negativity, it does end up seeping through. Do you find that?
Yeah, I do. I would agree. And I do think that people don't stick around and follow people if they're just going to put out negativity. Even if you're just saying, I feel really terrible, do you have any tips for something that I feel like I'm totally up for that. But if someone's just whinging at you, I mean, Instagram stories is where I go to relax. I don't need that kind of stress from other people.
Exactly. So yeah, there's totally a balance, isn't there? Like it's not just about, and also I think there's a balance in what you share as well. So I've been encouraging, like I really liked Sarah's done a talk to the camera challenge. Yes. My friend Charlotte from Betty Magazine has been encouraging people to do it, and I've been encouraging people to do it as well. But I guess there is a balance there as well. So I'm sort of encouraging people to be a bit more honest and show their faces and, you know, show a bit more of yourself to your followers, and like how, you know, what a great thing is for the community, but also for your business. It is really good. Like, people do want to see the person behind the brand.
Yes. But
also, you don't owe the internet your vulnerability. Me and Sarah were chatting about this as well, about her challenge. You don't have to share your real deep, dark, hairy, gross, whatever, you know. There's a balance between honesty and vulnerability, I think, with what you choose to share.
I think that's a really, really good point, because I can't remember who I was talking to about this. I don't know if it's a podcast episode that's gone out or it's one that I've recorded, and I can't even remember who it is, so this makes me the worst podcaster ever. I was talking to somebody someday about this, but we were talking about, we'll always be honest, but my truth won't always be the whole truth. I will never lie, but I won't always say every single truth in my life. And the story that I tell, I don't owe anyone that either. I don't need to tell you every single part of my life to make what I do tell you true.
Yes, exactly.
So I kind of think that everybody has to come to their own sweet spot. And I think it's really, really cool seeing all the people that I follow now talking to camera. I've always been pretty comfortable doing it. But I know that lots of the people that I follow haven't. And even people who I see as huge Instagrammers, like Hannah Argyle, I know that she finds it really uncomfortable. And she's been pushing herself to do it lots over the past year, I guess. And it's awesome to see that. But I don't feel like they owe me to keep doing loads of that if they feel really uncomfortable. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's also choosing what you know what you share. So I was chatting with my friend who's also a very big Instagrammer and freaking out about it. and I was like, you don't have to send, you know, like, I was like, what about the prompts that Sarah's doing? Or, you know, what about sharing something with your followers that they might not know? And she was like, that even feels a bit scary. And I was like, well, we'll just start with some tips about your industry then. Do you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't have to be, it doesn't have to even be very personal if you don't want it to be. But I think any sort of putting your face to camera is a good thing. And I think that lots of, particularly women, really shy away from it. Mm. Or they only do it when they're sort of made up and stuff. And it's like, so I think I find that Instagram stories has helped the platform feel a bit more diverse and real, and we're seeing a bit more real womanhood or something.
I completely agree with you. I think you see a wider look, a more holistic look at what people that we follow.
Yes,
which is great. I think and you're really, really good at that. So I think because of how you are on Instagram stories, I honestly think that gives other people permission to do the same. So your 20,000 followers or whatever, I don't know, you've got lots, but anyway, all of those people and everybody else that you reach on stories, which as we know is broader than just your followers, are being given permission to come on and be real and honest and not be fully made up and talk about the negative parts of life as well as the positive. And
yeah
I think it's a really good thing. And actually that leads me to something I wanted to ask you about, because it was before January, I think it was just before, was it in January that you released the January book?
I think so. No, it wouldn't have been before, because I'm not that organized. It will have been in
which my husband and I did the January book, and it was just amazing. I'll link to it in the show notes. But you said something that I found was really interesting. It was just a bit of a throwaway comment, and you were like, oh, I'm really excited. This is how many, and I can't remember how many people had downloaded it at that point, but you just released it and you'd said, say, I don't know, 300 people had downloaded it, and you said it, and then you were like, oh, I don't know if you're supposed to say your stats. Is that a bit naff? But you were sort of like, I don't really care. And I loved that, because that is something that comes up on this podcast again and again and again, is that people, and I even get messages that like people will DM me and ask me the question about, you know, you've been talking about what's a big blogger or what's a medium blogger. What does that actually mean? Tell me what the stats should be. And I think it's because people don't say. They don't say, oh, I'm really pleased with this post. It did really well. It got this many. And I don't actually think you have to do that, but I think it's super cool when someone does.
Yes. Oh, that's getting really vulnerable for people, isn't it? Sharing stats. Right. That's like a really closely guarded secret in our industry, isn't it? Like,
I think it is, yeah.
But I think I'm all up for it, actually. Same with money as well. So while we're going for the really big ones,
yeah,
like I always am up for. I think it's really important to talk about things like stats and money and what a brand has offered to pay you versus what that brand has offered to pay your mate.
Yeah.
who you know, things like that. I think there's a real lack of industry standards, I guess. I guess this comes with potentially the oversharing thing, but I think I'm always fairly open about, or I try to be fairly open about things like that. I just think it helps the industry be a bit of a better place.
Yeah, I agree.
The January book downloads, like I occasionally sort of create opt-ins for the blog, and up until that point, maybe 40 or 50 people had downloaded them. And I was always really thrilled with that.
Yeah.
It's now actually the January book has been downloaded nearly 1,000 times.
Wow.
So I can say that, but it's 900 and something, something.
That's amazing.
So yeah, that it's really blown me away actually. So, so that was just a real like, woohoo. Really didn't expect it to go down like that.
But do you think the success of that came from, because the reason I downloaded it is because you talked about it on stories. You talked about how you and Dave do the January book and you explained it, and then I saw you going away to Elmley, wasn't it, and yes, doing it. And I think that whole story behind it was really compelling.
Yes, definitely.
It was authentic. It didn't seem like you booked all this so that you could plug something. That was just what you were doing.
Yes, it was a really good example of like, I guess, accidentally soulful marketing. So this is a process and a thing that we do every January, including the bit where we go away to do it together. And when I've talked about it in previous years, I've always had loads of messages from people being like, what is this January book? Like, where have you got it from? And I was like, oh, it's just a thing we do in a notebook. And then, so this year I was like, oh, I'm going to put something together. And because I'm passionate about it, and because it's led to some such incredible stuff for me and Dave and our marriage and our work, it's really easy for me to talk about it very passionately. Mm. And I think, and on stories. So yeah, it was, yeah. And I think when someone's really passionate about something, I think it always is very helpful, I guess. Dave afterwards was like, maybe you should have just charged like £1 for it.
Oh my God.
I was like, well, I didn't really think about that, but
you should do like,
but yeah, see,
you should do like a value added with the January book, like maybe add a Facebook group and then charge even £20 for it, kind of rejig it, make it a bit more.
I'm totally gonna do that. So I'll still keep the core offering free because I want it to be. I love how much it's helped people.
Yeah.
But yes, me, like I'm trying to be a bit more business minded about it and think, what can I do that's like the next level up from it? Like, yes, exactly. So yeah, maybe a Facebook group or something, like, or maybe even a printed thing. Although I don't think there's any money in printed things.
No.
But it's been really amazing. And actually the thing that's shocked me most, I guess that it really shocked me, I guess it's the thing that people have come to me most about the January book. Oh my God, that made no sense. It's actually how it's helped their marriages.
Yeah.
So that the comments that I'm getting from people who have done the January book is, oh, my husband isn't normally a talker and this has been amazing. And we've talked about stuff that I didn't think we'd ever be able to talk about.
I would tell people what the January book is.
Oh, that's good. Shall I explain what the January book is for your listeners?
Yeah. Sometimes I forget that they're listeners. Hi, guys.
So in case you're listening and like, what are they talking about? It's a planning and review process. And it's that me and my husband do every January, and we have done for like, I think this was the ninth year. And it's, we sort of do it in categories. It's changed quite a bit over the years how we do it. So I think the one that we've settled on now is pretty good, but like we'll review work, our marriage, how we parent, and even like lifestyle stuff. Like that's kind of the reason that we decided to stop eating meat and dairy, things like that. So
I basically turned it into a little printable and a guide to help people come up with their own categories and like come up with a word for the year, and put it on my blog, and then was a bit blown away by the response it had. So that's what the January book is.
And it's such a simple, it is so simple, but it's so brilliant. I mean, simple in the nicest way. It's not simple like, oh, I could have done it myself.
No,
I would never have thought of it. And Ollie was so, my husband was so into it. He, like, it was brilliant. We had the nicest time, and we were actually away that weekend for something else anyway. And we just thought, oh, let's just, and I printed it out and was like, I kind of want us to do this. What do you think? And he was like, yeah, okay. And we got into it, and he was so into it. And when we came back,
really?
He was like, the following weekend, he was like, oh, should we do the January book on Saturday?
That's amazing. Yeah. I love hearing that.
Yeah, we've absolutely loved it. And we're going to get it out again because we're moving and kind of everything's changing. So he has said, I think we should redo our January book. What do you think?
That's amazing. I mean, me and Dave, it works out really well for us because our wedding anniversary is July. So we do like another mid-year review. Yes. So that's one thing that I'm planning on doing is I'm going to do a version in July, encouraging other people to go back to their January book and just check against it. And but yeah, it's really worth redoing. And like, I guess the January book isn't going to be, I think just doing it and coming up with your big life goals is an incredibly powerful thing. But in terms of making it more useful for your sort of everyday life, it's nice to check in with it and put stuff in place and make plans and then go back and, oh, is that plan working? Or do we need to scrap that altogether or put a whole new thing in? And I guess it works best as like a living thing rather than just this thing you do one time at the beginning of the year and then forget about.
I think it's brilliant. So has that, leading on from that, has that kind of guided your, because you've talked about kind of soulful marketing and you are like, you can tell the type of person you are, you're very soulful. And how has that guided your business goals? Because I know that both you and Dave are freelance and now you've got another baby. It's like it's a whole different ball game, isn't it? How is that guiding your future business kind of wise?
That's like the question of the moment. So I always find that year after having a baby to be, I mean, obviously incredibly hard. And I mean, he's actually just turned one. So, it's longer than that. And I am feeling physically completely depleted, but also I find it a very creative time as well. And I've realized that that's not unique to me. I think there's something about having a baby and literally creating life that releases creativity in a lot of women. And also there's something about having a child and you wanting to actually deal with some of the baggage you've carried around and wanting to be a better human and a more confident human for your child that makes you want to actually go for these things that you've been thinking about going for. So I went through that once with Frankie and then again when Auden was born. So I've been doing basically since he was born a lot of like thinking and pondering and journaling and like thinking, you know, and I think, yeah, I do want to do something which combines my love of interiors and my background in interiors with stuff like the January book and the stuff I talk about a lot about sort of managing mental health stuff and anxiety and things like that, and even marriage as well. Like that's in the January book, the subject that I was contacted about more than anything else was marriage, and that's actually something that I feel like I'd quite like to talk about a bit more, because we were 20 when we got married, like complete children, but I do feel like we've ended up creating an amazing thing for us, and it's not perfect, but through processes like the January book, it's kept as close. I don't know. Yeah, anyway, sorry, I'm sort of, there's so many things I could talk about. But I'm trying to, because sort of I've recently just redone my website. And I used to have my hannahbullivant.com was totally separate to seasonstitches.com, which was like my lifestyle blog. It's now all together. Both of those point to hannahbullivant.com. And that's because I'm trying to bring all of the things that I do under one roof. So it's like an important act for me to just have one website now. And the tagline of that website is Soulful Living. So that's the thing as well, that I'm trying to bring all of this stuff underneath. So it's like interiors, but I'm not an interiors well, I'm not a conventional interiors blogger. So I probably am not going to be doing trend forecasts or like things like that. But I do feel really passionate about the power of home and how important it is that your home is a sanctuary for you. And especially when you've got kids, but even, you know, definitely not just when you've got kids. And also I want to be talking a lot more about stuff like the January book, and I'm going to be releasing something in the middle of the year as well, like a sort of part, you know, plan B, part two January book as well. So does that answer that question?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, but it's super exciting. And I love how you've described kind of just tying everything. I was basically nodding the whole way through because Anais, my little girl, turns one next month, and I completely high-fiving to all of those points. I felt so creative throughout pregnancy, so creative afterwards, and so wanted to do something important, whatever that, and when I say important, I don't mean important, I don't know, I don't want to run for be the next prime minister, but important to me. I wanted to do something that she's proud of and do something more than what I was just doing. And yeah,
it makes you braver, doesn't it? I think it makes you braver. So yeah,
because if you've had a baby, and I don't want to cut out anybody who hasn't had a baby, it's really hard to talk about anything to do with women's fertility, because I always feel like you can be offending someone. But you don't have to have had a baby to become this brave, but for me, and clearly for you as well, like it was a very profound change, I guess. And when you were saying bringing everything into one website, I'm doing the same so I've changed my handles on social media now, and I just want everything to be in one place, and I want to be able to bring everything together. Because you do end up doing lots of different things, don't you? It's that classic, what, you know, Emma Gannon talks about it, the multi-hyphenated, we are all that now. And sometimes I think when you've got children, and if you're living with anxiety or any kind of mental health, you do just need some calm.
Yes.
And I think even having just one website can help your kind of quiet your mind a little bit. I don't know if I've gone a bit woo there, but
no, that's sort of what I meant by saying it was like a symbolic act to bring those things all under one thing. And underneath that, let's see if I can articulate this. Underneath that is an understanding that actually what I do, what you do is you.
Yeah.
So I've realized that my brand is me, and like, and actually that I don't think I felt good enough for that before, and that's why I had to keep them. I'm in a better place with accepting, with self-acceptance, to be able to say that actually, yes, you know, I don't have a single thing that I do, because I am what I do. And being confident enough to just flip and sit with that, because I've tortured myself. Oh, but what is my thing? You know, what is my big, I don't feel like I have one single big dream or one single thing that I do. I'm interested in a few different things, but I do find it, there's a level of peace that I've been able to put them all under one website and also under the same tagline. We'll see how that goes.
Do you think that held you back, that feeling of I'm not good enough?
Yes, totally. That's part of the sort of inner work, I guess, that I've been doing since having Auden, actually. Figuring out what I do. I mean, for a long time I didn't even call myself a stylist, because I was like, well, I haven't studied styling, and you know, I came to styling through an unconventional route. So a lot of stylists will assist other stylists and do a lot of that before they can go out on their own, or they get agents or whatever. I just sidled in right at the top. I've not really done any assisting at all. I literally just did some styling, I worked with a photographer and was able to sell those photos to a magazine, and it's literally just gone from there. That led to being asked to do events and style still life for brands. So even though that's the thing, that's how I earn my money and that's my day job, and I've done it a lot, I still have major imposter syndrome about that, and so that's like a constant process to kind of deal with those very unhelpful thoughts.
Do you kind of CBT it and stop your thinking when the negative thoughts start to happen?
No, I don't know whether I do. I don't stop my thinking. So I am a big fan of journaling. I used to call it a diary. So I've had one since I was a little girl, and used it kind of on and off since then. But most recently, as I've been doing a lot of pondering and thinking, I've been using writing in my journal a lot. So that's possibly the single biggest thing that has always been very helpful for me. So I call I'm an external processor. Yeah. So that's like, I'm not very good. If I just sit alone with my thoughts, they tend to become a bit irrational and loom. And, so I need to either talk them out or write them out. And I've literally always been like that. So with all of that stuff, with all of those feelings of imposter syndrome or not feeling good enough or not knowing what I want to do, then I write it out. Sometimes reams and reams and reams and reams. And also the thing that I've added in more recently to my journaling, and actually this is since I had Auden, is affirmations. So I found them really, really life-changing. So as well as just doing that kind of brain dump thing of just processing outside of myself, the thoughts in my mind, which in itself is very useful. I then will do some, write down the stuff I'm grateful for. I've been doing that for now for, I think, maybe a couple of years. And then I'll also write down some affirmations. And I was a bit skeptical about it. And I can understand why people listening might be like, I don't know, maybe I roll it. But I had a completely life-changing experience based on affirmations. So I did hypnobirthing with Auden after a really hideous birth with Frankie. And I believe, I still have this belief, not as strong at all, that I'm quite sensitive to pain. So I was like, I'm not going to have nice births. Like, not all women can have nice births. Like, you know, I do feel pain and I'm cool with that. And I'm cool with, you know, getting an epidural, or whatever. My sister-in-law at the time was a hypnobirthing teacher. So we did some classes with her, and the more I learned about it, about how our bodies work, and how connected our minds are to our bodies, I was like, oh, I'm going to give it a go. And basically with birth, I did a lot of birth affirmations about feeling calm, confident and safe, that I know what I'm doing, that my baby knows what it's doing. I'm focusing on the breath, and I ended up having a super calm, it ended up being very powerful home birth with Auden, and actually he was back to back.
Oh, wow.
And big. And so I was and that's me going from thinking, oh, I'll just go to hospital and have an epidural, to having a home birth with a baby who was large and back to back. And that's because I literally just immersed myself in these beliefs about myself. And I had the Calm Birth School do some birth affirmations, and I literally had them playing through my entire birth, my entire labor. So my poor birth team, my poor midwife and poor Dave. But I was literally hanging on them, and it totally worked. So after I had that experience, I was like, how can I apply this to other areas of my life? So I feel like I'm actually a bit evangelical about them, because I'm like, you can literally change. Like, if you immerse yourself deeply enough, and if you write it down and listen to it, and you know, then you can literally like change how your body feels pain. Yeah. Like, it's literally like, it's incredible.
I had the same experience. Never thought that not the same experience in birth, but that I honestly would never have, if somebody said to me about affirmations before I was pregnant, before I gave birth, I would have been like, well, yeah, nice, but I don't think it can change my life. But I started off with the Yes Mum affirmation cards. And I think if you see my Instagram throughout my pregnancy, there was constant affirmation card pictures, and it, honestly, and yes. I had a planned home birth, which ended up in an emergency C-section, but it was it was still incredibly positive. Like, I have the most positive feelings about the whole process, and it was because of the affirmation cards. And then afterwards, my husband bought me the Yes Mum Boss cards, and so I look at them every single day, and they honestly, I think they're amazing. If anybody's eye rolling, I would definitely, I'm going to stick a link to the affirmation in my profile in the show notes, and just check them out, because they're so cheap as well. Even if you're eye rolling at them, they're really pretty, they'll make great Instagram props. Just try them.
Absolutely. Yes. And they're such a good starting point. So I've kind of written my own. So I've got a note on my phone where I write my favorite affirmation. So So we were talking about imposter syndrome, for example. So if I'm thinking like, oh my God, I'm not good enough, you know, I can go to my like note on my phone and read them. I'm actually going to record them in my voice so that I can listen to them. But you know, I'll be like, you know, I'm confident in my styling, or like I deserve to be well paid for my styling work, or I'm shrewd when deciding which jobs to take on, or, you know, I'm willing to take risks to go far in my industry. So they are a bit cheesy and a bit woo, but it does really work. And it's like, you just reassure yourself, actually, you know, you've got this. So that was a really big, long answer, massive tangent. So how do I deal with imposter syndrome? But wow.
I loved it because I love hearing about, I mean, I'm a real birth pervert in that I could just listen to people's birth stories all day. And I love your birth story because it gives me a lot of hope for my, because I, you know, straight after my cesarean, and they were like, you're a great candidate for BBAC. And I thought at the time, well, if I can't have a home birth, then I don't really want to bother. And that's because people tell you that you're not allowed to do this, that, and the other. And I remember throughout my pregnancy, I was very, very passionate about birth rights and all the rest of it. Because I had an amazing doula. I had some really good role models that would say, actually, no, you don't have to be induced. There are other options. So push back. And it's the same with home birth. I can still try for another home birth if I want to. Anyway, I've gone off onto a tangent there because I'm thinking very much about that, because obviously if I have another baby, then I'm because I'm moving, I won't be in the same place, and where I was, they really supported home birth, and you just never know, do you? Like, I know, yeah, you just never know. So that's at the forefront of my mind at the moment. So that's a very long and rambly bit.
No, that sounds very exciting. It sounds exciting. Very exciting indeed. But yeah, I guess it sounds like you've given yourself the best possible start. Like my birth with Frankie, I did like a little bit of hypnobirthing, but I was quite poorly with her. So it was really, it was pretty traumatic. But it sounds, if you approach, what I'm trying to say is, you're already much further ahead than me. If you know, like, when, like, and the fact that you're even thinking about it. And yeah.
I mean,
God, I could talk about birth. That, it's almost like a whole other podcast.
Well, I keep thinking that because I'm like, I just want to talk about birth. But actually, some of the people that are listening to this podcast might not want to hear about birth. But hey-ho. If you do, then both of us have our own birth stories on our blogs. And I will link that in the show notes so you can go.
I love that you called yourself a birth pervert as well. That's incredible.
Probably got even worse. I want to quickly go back. I'm very conscious of time, but I want to quickly ask you, apart from obviously the things that we've talked about in terms of, you know, anxiety and mental health and imposter syndrome, which can be a real bugger, were there any other real stumbling blocks for you kind of throughout your career?
Stumbling blocks.
I mean those are massive ones, to be fair, to overcome.
I think the ones you said are probably the big ones. So like managing kids and a dream career is a big one, and I'm really determined to make it work. So a lot of, like, when I'm employed as a stylist, to style, products for a brand, for example, that's still quite a traditional industry. The initial negotiation at the moment, because I'm still breastfeeding Auden, is, my baby will be joining me for some parts of the day. So it's that sort of thing. It's like it's being brave enough to still go for the work that I want to go for, but negotiate how I manage Auden in that, if you know what I mean. So, and also just generally the fact that me and Dave are both freelance is very parent friendly. I mean, not always. Occasionally there is that like train wreck where we're both got jobs on and both kids are sick, but mostly it's amazing in that we can share and balance. Like, he's downstairs with Auden at the moment and he did the school run this morning. And it means that we can both support each other to follow the creative sort of industry passions that we have with our jobs, but also be around a lot with our family. So that's an ongoing process as well. That's something I want to talk about a bit more. But I think coming up against, there's still maybe one of the big stumbling blocks is the sort of cultural expectations of, around mums and dads as well. You know, me and Dave have to work, even though we're pretty progressive in how we share childcare, we still have to work very hard at not slipping into those cultural norms and the expectations that, oh, if your child is sick, then it's automatically the mum that gets phoned from school, and the mum that goes to collect the kid, and then it's the mum that, that takes the hit on their work. It's not the dad. Or like the other day on Monday, I've been feeling really shattered and overwhelmed just baby wise. I was like, oh, I'm going to go and hang out with a friend and do something creative. And the way I even spoke about it with Dave was, oh, that will just mean that you have to have Auden. Is that okay? And, you know, and I was like, he wouldn't say that to me. You know, it's like, so I guess that is a really big challenge actually, is, you know, coming up against those cultural norms. And Dave's industry, he's a director and a photographer, but in the directing industry, it's incredibly patriarchal and old fashioned. And, you know, the guys are expected to be there for very long days. It's thought of nothing for them to go away for months at a time. It's really not family friendly. And so Dave, in a lot of ways, is pushing against the stream every day in his attempt to be home and not follow the, like, it's a very laddie culture as well. Like, it's really, I don't know. So they have been the challenges, I guess, for both of us, trying to parent equally.
I mean, from my point of view, from following you online, you just are such an inspiration. You're doing such an amazing job. You've certainly, and I don't mean this to sound like crazy fangirly, but you've definitely changed my, I just want to say life, but that feels a bit like dramatic. But
Whoa.
Well, you've definitely like shifted my perspective on things for this year, for my marriage and my business, and definitely, you know, that's quite a lot of responsibility to put on you. I'm so sorry. And also, you made me rethink.
No, it's incredible. What an honour, genuinely.
You made me rethink my hatred of Kent as well. Just for it's so funny because on. So I can't remember what it was. It was in February. I was at Sass Petherick's amazing Write Yourself Home. I guess it's kind of a retreat workshop. It's amazing. And Hannah was there styling, and it's so beautiful. And you can see on my Instagram, I've got some of the pictures. They're incredible. And I was talking to you that day about, and I think I was talking to the group about the fact that I have this very funny thing about not moving back to Kent, and that come, and I worked out where it had come from. And you had left before the end of the day, but at the very end of the day, I switched on my phone, and we'd had an offer on our flat. And I was like, oh, it felt really magical. Like, oh my god, this feels like it means something. And I don't know if that's just because the day in itself is just incredibly magical, but it definitely made me think, oh, I'm going to start looking at places in Kent. Maybe, I mean, we've bought a place in Brighton, but it definitely made me think more than twice about, yeah, maybe I could move back to Kent.
I mean, Brighton and Kent are similar. I mean, Brighton's obviously super super cool, but both of them are sort of coastal, and you know, you're still commutable to London, and that's exciting. I hadn't realized you'd bought
We've offered on it, and I don't think you're allowed to say you've bought it until we haven't exchanged, but we move in like 2 weeks' time.
Oh my god, and you've not exchanged yet. I'm not looking forward to this process.
It's terrible. This is my second time doing this process, and my husband is an estate agent, and it's still terrible.
but it's fine,
it just gets done. Oh. It's very, that's what they say, isn't it? It's more stressful than having a baby or getting married, but. It just gets done. You just have to zen out throughout the whole thing. In fact, affirmations relating to house buying would be very, very helpful.
Just write some. You could write your own. I'm a big fan of writing your own. And also, I keep meaning to write a post about managing moving stress as well. I could talk to you about that separately. But yeah, affirmations and having small corners of calm. I can highly recommend keeping certain spaces and areas as beautiful spaces that you can kind of retreat to and keep feeling like you, so that it's not all a complete shithole, basically.
That's a really, really good idea. And on that note, where can everybody find you online?
So now I have, I'm known as both HannahBullivant.com and SeasonStitches.com, but both of those will point to the same place now after like 2 years of work.
And you're on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Cool. I'll link to it all in the show notes.
Thanks for listening to What She Said. I really appreciate it. I hope you enjoyed the episode, and if you did, please think about leaving me a 5-star rating and a review if you have time. This really helps other people find the podcast and means that Apple don't hide me in their vaults. If you fancy joining my small but perfectly formed bunch of podcast fans for chit chat on Facebook, head to facebook.com/groups/whatshesaidpodcast and come and join us.